here.
Hi, Thomas. Thomas, we think it may be, unfortunately, the MP3 recording connection, because we began to pick the echo back up again when that line was joined. So we're going to try to see if we can work through this. I don't think it's quite as bad as it was on the last bridge.
Oh, yes, it's considerably better.
Yeah.
This year.
Okay. What I wanted to do today, and Tony and I had been trying to catch up with each other, but what we need to do today is try to focus on discussion about the four items, because we need to post for the interim report the expanded section. And I'm afraid we're missing some of the folks who have been working on drafting those sections. So can I, I know some of you are on those working groups, I need to call and give the number to Steve, to Christy, and to Ken to make sure that, and to Rom, I guess, all of whom are missing here. Can I maybe suggest that those of you who are working on those groups might bring us up to date on where you are? I think actually Christy is traveling and is going to be late today, as I recall.
I can speak to what we're being up to.
Tim, if you would do that while I try to find these other folks.
Okay. Here I am nothing more than the trying to be a person who pulls out the implications of what Christy was doing. Christy came up with a web page, which basically was a series of information of things that are available, the kind of information that is available off the net about anyone who is on it through various means. She said the DOS prompt. And we sent out an email, which I believe was to the list, and it was basically attempting to give people a picture of the very large amount of information that could be gleaned from the internet, from the web, from anywhere about people's addresses and information. The point of this information was that before we go getting ourselves hugely worked up about the WHOIS system, that the knowledge available to, shall we say, you know, geeks or the technically literate about people on the net should be available to this group so that people could see what is available and how much is available. And when you see how much is available, it tends to make one see the problem of who is in perspective regarding well, what is available. And there is a list that went out to our group, and I think it should be ripe to send out to the rest of you. That is well, it shows what is available from that web page. Now, the premise of the operation was that the response says in the survey would be found to be not statistically valid, and that in any case, information generically is available on the net, which provides a factual basis for ascertaining or demonstrating to anyone that that the amount of information available about people on the net is very large, and that a great deal of it does not come from or is dependent upon the WHOIS. So you will see when we send it out. But basically, the corollaries of these findings were that the WHOIS is not as important as many believe, that a great deal of information is freely available from other resources. The second point was that more people need to know about how to obtain this information so that, A, the WHOIS does not become the forum for useless controversy and wasted effort. B, policy changes are not necessarily required to WHOIS, though they might be. And C, ISPs and registrars, basically anybody, can write their own graphical user interface to query networks for valuable information without accessing all of the WHOIS database. And the implication of this being that ISPs and others do not need to have a centralized database to accomplish these functions. So, and we conclude also that those who want more information than what can be shown on these lookups probably have bad intentions, and they do not need to be catered to by a centralized WHOIS.
I'm sorry. I've heard as much of this. I think I need to stop and ask you a question. This sounds. Are we redoing our survey?
You're not redoing your survey. The point came from Christy that the survey results will never be statistically unquestionable, and in any case, relative to the information that she's provided on her web page, these are simply facts, not opinions.
Because I think we need to be very careful about the work of the task force and the amount of time and resources and financial commitment that has gone into it. I think we just need to be a little sensitive to making sure that we all understand clearly what the purpose of this web page is.
I'm trying to explain what the purpose
is. Right. I just was trying to...
The purpose of the web page is not to say anything about the report, but simply say, these are facts. This information is available. And since this information is uncontrovertibly available, all thinking about the who is and whether to modify it and how needs to take account of the fact that Christy McKee went out and set up a web page showing conclusively that a great deal of information is available about people in the Internet without reference to the who is system. And from that fact, a good deal of corollaries or inferences can follow. That's what she's showing.
And how can you show that a great deal of information is available except via the WHOIS?
Wait, Lorenz, first of all, I want to go to that question, but let me ask him to clarify. When we say a great deal of information is available about individuals versus a great deal of contact information is available, can you distinguish between those two for us? Because who is contact information as opposed to a great deal of information about someone. I mean, you can do a Google on Marilyn Cade, find her picture, find the inane speeches she's given, the MP3 should strike that inane word, et cetera, find out, a fair amount about her, what she does, what her bio is. You can find out where she lives, probably. You can find all of that you can find out she bought a house 4 years ago, what kind of car she owns, all those kinds of things. But that's information about me as opposed to contact information.
I think that is a distinction without a difference, Marilyn. And I don't... she went on to the... If you go to her page, which you have access to, and that I can send to you, you can send out to this list, because I don't have the address for this list collectively. And again, I am simply representing what...
No. This is very helpful. I think we're all trying to. Lorenz, was that the kind of question that you were going to?
Yes, it was absolutely linked to this question. And also, I understand. Yeah, it's not clear for me when you say it's a fact that this information are on the internet, because we don't really know which information, or maybe we should show why we say that. On which basis we can say that?
I can give you the link, but I didn't get in yet, but as I got, the only contact information that is available concerning the domain and not concerning servers, DNS, or whatever, is on the WHOIS web result, or which could have been done on the Porsche 45 as well, but is on the WHOIS result. Any other thing gives you the information that is necessary in order to solve problems, as I normally would say, but none about the user data.
Well, look, this is yes, exactly. But the point is that this raises the question: is for whom and for what purposes is who is established? And you've got your answers in the sense that it seems to be established. There's many ways of getting contact with people that do not depend on the who is. So the who is allows for useful contact information of the kind sought for purposes, say, intellectual property protection. But what Christy was trying to get across to me was that there was a set of results that are available
to
people who can
the
find information about you without reference to the who is.
But that would mean, that would, and I just sent an email out, I have Gail calling the people who aren't on the call, who are normally on the call, and I also sent an email out.
I'll give you a call later, and we'll
find
you just
the,
pick up a
date that you can in the bridge.
Maryland?
Hi, who's joined?
Oh, this
oh,
Kim Stuck, Maryland.
I'll just give you a number of days that
I've Dan?
Yes, yeah, I got your number.
Great.
I've been on. I was listening to Tim.
Okay,
so.
good. What I was just saying to Tim is it would seem to me, Tim, that one thing I would take from that, Ben, and unfortunately, as I had mentioned, I took Friday off to go to a family wedding, so I'm a bit behind. That would say to me that if the assumption is that there are other resources which provide some information to some categories of respondents to the survey who say they use WHOIS. Remember in our survey, the ISPs who responded, as well as business users and IP people and individuals, all said that they rely on WHOIS.
I'm just trying to...
That's very questionable, but I believe I wrote something about that straight to the Who Is list, and not that I got any reaction to it.
I'm sorry, Abel?
I said that statement is mainly handled by question 5, as I wrote to the Who Is list, of which I got no comment whatsoever. And that's let's be fairly honest, if you depend on the Who Is, then I wonder what you're doing besides buying or selling the mint.
Let's back up for just a minute and try to walk through this. The question I was asking was, does Christie's page identify the fact that there are other sources of information on the web where information similar to some of the information in WHOIS is now found?
No.
No, I don't think.
No. What the page shows is that there are a number of searchable elements on the net, which are to do with DNS, with domains and with searches, which your network query tools, your Resolve, your reverse lookup, your DNS query, your DIC, your WHOIS, and the WHOIS, as I already said, is the only one who's turning out user data. All other fields. All other checks don't.
Wait a minute, guys. I'm having trouble with that answer in the following way. Some of the information that is in WHOIS,
mm-hmm.
such as the admin contact or
mm-hmm.
the technical contact, is available through other sources. Is that what her page shows?
No way.
This is Christy.
The only way to find out personal data about the technical contact or the administrative contact or the registrant is through the WHOIS database that I know about.
Stop. Because we are getting Christy, welcome, and actually Tim has done a great job of trying to explain your page, and now we're all very hungry to start over on this and ask you even more questions. So when we back up, let me make sure that we know who we have on the call. And I want to make sure Tony is here, right?
Yes, I'm here.
We've added Christy and we've added Ken.
Marilyn, this is Ron.
Oh, good.
Hey,
okay.
Ron.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
And what about Karen?
Karen is on vacation, I believe, this week.
Okay.
Good for her.
Okay. Then, great. Then let's back up. What we wanted to do, and maybe we start, if Tim, it's okay with you, you did a great job of getting us all primed, but why don't we start with Christy, tell us again what your page did and does, and kind of what you see it augmenting in terms of the task force's work?
Okay. The purple section at the top of the page is the section that's missing the most amount of information.
And I know you sent us the link, so I don't know that anyone's looking at it while we're
okay.
speaking.
What it has is the Who is Web Searchable Elements from the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, what they are. And these are the elements that, this is where we need to do the most work. We need to write down, you know, kind of the interesting queries that we could be asking for and show why they simplify things to kind of create some better ideas, generate some ideas about what we mean about better searchability, and this that is what we need to focus on getting prepared, because that's the information that's missing, is, you know, what are we going to do about better searchability? What we recognize from the rest of the page is here are some basic tools that you can use to find out a lot of information about someone who's on the Internet. And we use the best-case scenario of Sun.com, who it has accurate data and has a lot of accurate data, and it's all been configured correctly as far as I can tell, and which is a great example. But we'll probably want to also provide another example of someone who doesn't have great DNS information, because those people who don't have great DNS information are really, you need to find their DNS information in an inappropriate location, which is the Who is. Because if they don't have their DNS configured correctly or set up standard, then the DNS query tools can't find it.
And one thing that I would pause and make a comment on from my company's point of view, and I heard this at the those of you who attended the event that that was focused on security, Steve Belevin, the AT&T fellow and researcher who spoke on the security issues, commented, as did several other presenters, about the high number of ISPs who do not have their DNS properly configured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have all sorts of funny stuff. But that's the IETF that has to make the standards and enforce that, right?
Well, the IETF doesn't enforce standards, but you're it is their job to develop the standards. The problem with configuration by the ISPs is that there's so many disparate implementations already out there for a variety of reasons, and there's no single place to go to encourage them to make changes. It's not even a U.S. national ISP association, and there are, of course, thousands of ISPs or people who act in an intermediary fashion who figure DNS. But in any case, I think your point is taken, and one that we should try to document in our area of concern. So if DNS is properly configured, there are other places to go. If DNS is not properly configured, people may turn to a variety of other sources.
Yeah, well, they'll have to turn to the Who is. I don't know where else they could find the information.
Okay, so that's the proof of what Laurence was talking about, which is no substitute for Who is for a lot of the uses of finding contact information.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to understand then, if that is so, then it comes back to the centrality of the Who is for information, which seems to be somewhat different from what we were talking about last week.
Yeah. I think it is. I think that we had to kind of come full circle on that. But I don't think that people have to query and get back all this information. I think that, you know, for example, let's say our hostmaster at Sun.com wants to know information about when his domains are going to expire. And because he hasn't been a good administrator, and so he doesn't know when all the domains are expiring, and so he needs that information. So why couldn't this administrator, this hostmaster at Sun.com, just log into his registrar and get a list of his domains and the registration expiration dates? I think he ought to be able to do that. I don't think that I should be able to go and do that about him, though. And so I think maybe those are the types of things we're talking about with better searchability, is to be able to search on specific elements and to get our reports back that really only have those elements, because we don't need all the information that they send us back when we ask about a domain name. Is it available? Yes or no. We can. We don't have to use, you know, who is so much for that. We can use ping. Is it alive? Is a domain registered or not? We need who is, but we only need to tell them yes or no. We don't need to tell them who it's registered to. So it's kind of how we're using the who is that I think it needs to be what we focus on looking at and explaining that there are better ways to use who is. We don't have to go and get a whole record set and bring it back.
Christy, it seems to me that one of the things that we also need to understand is sort of to have a spreadsheet in our mind and maybe even in our report that sort of would say something like, who is being used for the following task. There are other resources that could or should fulfill some of the tasks. Like, for instance, I would envision us getting to the idea that when we talk to John Clemson and Patrick Falstrom and others about what's going on in above the DNS directory services, that the group would all agree that Whois, first of all, makes an extremely poor directory, and secondly, that is not really its purpose. So that if you we can begin to sort of move out some of the not vital uses of Whois. By noting where it's more appropriate to go to get those needs fulfilled.
Okay. I will, no problem.
But if we're going to be, but we have to be realistic that if the DNS is so properly, so improperly configured that Whois remains a vital resource, we maybe in our recommendation section we would be able to say, in the future, with the rollout of IPv6, it may be possible to educate ISPs about making configuration changes in the DNS. In the meantime, we seem to be stuck with some reliance on the Whois by the sysadmin and ISP world. But so we're kind of thinking about that in our mind as we go through the searchability and who's using it and what they're using it for. Because it may lead us to think that differential access is, in fact, acceptable as a recommendation.
Okay. It is?
Okay. Well, I think we will probably be asking that question,
We have support. I mean, there's support from the statistics from our report. I don't know if we call it support or not, but the statistics in our report support that idea.
Right.
Okay. And that's good.
Marilyn, just one short remark. Please don't be naive about educating all the admins out there about how to configure things properly. You have to be very, very drastic if you want to get this.
Oh, Thomas. I was part of the Y2K education team at AT&T. Believe me, I know. It's Thomas.
What is
Thomas, you have to remember my philosophy that if it can go wrong, it will go wrong.
I'm sorry?
And if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. And if human beings can get it wrong, they will. That's my philosophy.
Of course. And if there's a manual involved, it won't be read.
Christy, I'm sorry. I think this is very good. This is. I hope others are finding this helpful. Do you want to keep walking through this?
Okay. I think really that's Tim, you walked him through the edited typed up deal. Yes or no? Did we lose Tim? Tim?
I'm on mute.
Okay. Wow. Did you walk them all the way through the text information?
Yeah, but I don't think. Look, Christy, according to what you're now saying, I would have to say that our text is. Let's back up. I am trying to make sense of your web page, okay?
Okay.
Because I'm just an illiterate lawyer. And when I come to your web page, I look at all this technical babble and I go, what does it show or not show? So we come up with a story what it shows or does not show. Now you're telling me something different than what we were doing last week. So it's no point in going over that again. We have to modify the interpretation of what your webpage shows.
Okay.
You're attempting to show that the information shows X, Y, and Z. And we found out that it really doesn't substitute for the lookup capacities of who is.
Right.
But that there is a good deal of information for ascertaining certain facts about people who use the net. So I think that we have to be more careful about what is shown or not shown on your pages.
Right.
What who is, and what it really seems to be is who is a much more complete set of contact information than any other source.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so don't let me talk you into any proposition other than what is exactly shown on your webpage, which is to say that it shows really that the only source of information, as I interpret you now, it really gives a lot of useful contact information, is who is, though some contact information may be derived from the other places.
Right.
Correct interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
That was my understanding before you did the page. That was my general understanding of who is, and it would be helpful to have that, you know, validated, because I sort of think of this as a sunflower. Who is sort of in the middle, and there are petals that have part of the kinds of information you can find in who is, but there's no single substitute for the compiled information that is in who is.
Yeah. I really wanted to find out that wasn't true, and
excuse
I couldn't.
Excuse me, this is AT&T. May I join Tony Harris to the conference?
Please do.
Thank you.
Morning, Tony. So I found out that it was true that we really do need who is, and so who's using it? What are they using? These are questions that I think I can get to now that I've proven to myself that we have to have it. But Tim can attest, I tried very hard to come up with an instance where we didn't really need it.
Well, I think I would ask others to comment on this. I think, you know, Abel and Thomas and Lawrence and Rahm and others, because I think this is a very helpful revalidation of what the survey, the assumption that we drew out of the survey, that who is important.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Abel?
It has some importance. I still don't see it as really important.
Now, guys, you're going to listen to me do a little sales pitch here. So, Abel, I'm not technical, and boy, of all people...
And as being a technical and a system administrator, I hardly ever use the whois. What I do use in the whois is just for a shortcut on seeing a name server, and that's it. I mean, I'm totally not interested in who owns the domain. If there's a network problem, the owner of the domain cannot do anything for me anyway.
So what you're telling us, and I think that's a valid position to take, but what you're telling us is, you know, when you look at your sides of the world...
Hello, I'm back.
No, well, I don't think... What is my? I look at the Internet side of the world and look at what is who is useful for. That's what I wrote my email about a couple of days ago to the who is list. I think I was very clear in that. That's derived from a question that was direct in the questionnaire. I have not fizzled about with any of the stats that came out of there. I've just interpreted them and basically said I agree with that completely.
But Abel, what I'm asking you to do is step back and think about who is from the perspective of someone like me, who isn't technical. I'm not a sysadmin, and I'm not fixing a problem in the Internet. I am using who is for other purposes. And I think that's the benefit of what we all bring to the to this task force is a wide variety of different points of view about who is. So Lawrence, I think, and Lawrence, I should ask you to speak for yourself on this, but you, I think, would say that from your experience and the needs of the community you're trying to represent, there's not another resource that meets your needs. Is that right?
Yes, it's for intellectual property purpose enforcement. It's really the only means that we have. So it's a very necessary source of information. But again, yes, it's from our perspective. No, I can understand yours. But I suppose for consumers as well, it would be.
But if I may interrupt for 1 minute, that's exactly what I say in my email.
Right.
I say that there are certain parties, like IP, like law enforcement, that do need the information that's in the WHOIS. But then I say this is data that is collected anyhow. As you register a domain, you have to tell them who you are, where you live, and what your phone number is. That's a normal way of going about things. If I breach an IP ownership by selling something, not on the internet but on the normal market, they have to go to other lengths to find out who I am. So these tools are available. I'm not saying that because WHOIS is there, then that's a nice shortcut. Keep it available, but at a price and not available to the general public. I mean, that's the consensus also of the questionnaire.
No, I don't agree. I think the survey really showed that a wide range of people, of groups,
guys, Abel, let her finish before responding to her, because we need to have this discussion. Lawrence, go ahead.
No, it's just what I wanted to say. I mean, I don't agree that the survey shows that some groups need WHOIS more than others, or that the WHOIS is not finally so necessary. I really think that it was the first question and the first thing on which we really focused and on which we worked. We saw the results, and I was myself really surprised, in fact, to see that so many groups would have an interest.
I think Tony's right. I think we ought to run a queue on this so that we can all comment. So Lorenz is speaking, and I heard that Thomas wants to speak, and Tony wants to speak.
Marilyn, this is Rom.
Rom wants to speak.
And Tim.
And Tim wants to speak. Ken? No, I'm going to put you in queue. I'm going to put you in queue.
Stick me in the queue at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Put me at the end.
I've got enough people there. You know, I talk too much anyway, so I don't think anybody's going to miss them. I don't.
Okay, so let me make sure that Lorenz has finished, and then we will go to Thomas, and then I'll put Abel again in at the end of the queue.
Yes, thanks.
Is that okay? Lorenz?
Yes, I have finished, Marilyn. I have finished.
Great. And guys, let me just say something. This is a very important policy discussion that is exactly what we need to be doing. So I think Tony and I will both be very pleased that we're at this stage. So this is not, this is the debates that these are the debates we need to have. So Thomas, you're on.
Okay, I'll Abel, get somewhat into the business of repeating old emails. I think that Laurence's analysis is, of course, correct if you just say there are a lot of groups who find WHOIS nice to have for some kinds of purposes, but we're not here to produce something which is nice to have. Something which is nice to have is called a business opportunity, and you pay for it. We are here to discuss what kind of access is essential for users and for purposes which are so important to the public and to the community's interest that they actually justify ICANN mandating this kind of access. That's the kind of users we have to focus on, and we are not here to facilitate the search for old roommates or the search for old classmates or whatever other activities you have for WHOIS. So the question for each use, which we have seen in the survey, is this an essential use, or do they like it, but could this be replaced by another free service, by something offered by a business, by some kind of directory, by something else, which would most likely even be better suited to these particular purposes than WHOIS may be.
Guys, I need to interject something as a let me remind you, all of you, that as you think about this, we are talking, there is a who is policy. There is who is policy in place today. So we are talking about changes to existing policy and practices, okay? So we need to remember that it's not just, you know, when we're saying nice to have, there is who is policy. It was written, it is in place today. So remember, as you talk about what you want to see or what you think the recommendation should be, we are supposed to be advising on what changes, if any, in existing policy are needed and how should that be undertaken.
Marilyn, at this point, I'm trying to clean up some arguments because...
No, I know, but I just wanted to remind people as they respond going forward from your comments.
Okay, I wasn't completely finished, actually.
Okay.
So the key point to me is really, first of all, let's clean up our arguments and let's not mix these various uses. If this boils down to the finding that the community thinks that it is a good thing to have a cheap possibility to find an address of a domain name owner in order to sue that domain name owner, that may be a finding we could come up with, and we should suggest changes which are suitable for that purpose. And at the same time, we should look at data elements and ask, do these elements have to be there in order to match this need? And that's a discussion we should have, for instance, on data elements. That's the discussion we should have on access conditions, possibly. We should really look what possible change would have which effect onto which due, and is this an effect we find unacceptable or desirable, or is it something we really don't care about? And in that case, I believe we should clearly fail on the side of registrant's privacy. So if we can strike anything without if we can strike something from the Whois database without making critical users difficult or impossible, then we should do that. We should not talk about keeping elements in the database just in order to make just in order to have something nice available. Okay, thanks. That's it for the moment.
Okay. Tony?
Yes, I'm sorry because I was knocked off the call for about 10 minutes. I may have missed part of the thread on this. But I did want to say with respect to what was discussed initially by, I believe it was Tim who was giving us a briefing on the fact that everyone has access to all the information they need regardless of the Whois database. And my point is very simple, and I agree with something that Marilyn said there too. A lot of people who might be looking for something in the Whois regarding a registration are not aware of these other sources of information, which I think are more in the tech world. And I mean, if this is the case, let's say, well, why do we bother about Whois? Because the information, you can get it from somewhere else. Perhaps then the Whois database should contain links to the other sources of information if we're not going to alter the way the Whois is run right now.
May I ask what you mean by links? Should each Whois query
want
to find information on the net or what?
All right. Let's not say a link then. If the information is available elsewhere, let's spell it out and say if you want information on the IP servers, you have to go to this place and look it up and.
Why is that the business of ICANN to mandate this kind of information, or why should this be a mandated service?
That's very simple. If you're a registrant and you're trying to work through problems with a domain name, or you could be an IP lawyer or something, you know, I'm not talking about a network operator or an ISP. If there is a registry and a registrar service which is offering you domain names and you are contracting through them, they should be able to direct you easily to any source of information which is relevant to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
otherwise, why do we have a Whois in the first place?
No, I'm sorry. There's two kinds of things to what you're saying. first aspect is direct me to any information I desire. That's what I call customer care, and what a good it is what a good registrar should provide for me. The second thing is what information must be made available, and the latter thing is what who is about.
Thomas.
Okay.
Wait.
I have no problem with that.
Thomas, I actually think you missed a point that Tony made, and I think it's an important point, and that those of you who are very technical and who are very net savvy need to be much more sensitive about this point in your expression, because more and more users who come on the Internet are not tech savvy. And one of the points I thought that Tony was making is something like the following. What would be wrong with a easy-to-find list or glossary that referred the user, sort of a set of FAQs or something of that nature that maybe was available under Internet or was available as a customer service by the registrar that advised people of where else to go? You're taking it as mandating. And I think some of us would think of it as being maybe not mandated, but a voluntary recommendation that then could be implemented that people might not have been thinking about.
Okay,
I
was thinking
right
about
quick?
This discussion in the context of policymaking. That
yeah.
I think about a mandate.
Maryland, may I suggest we do the list and let people get it off? This
yeah.
conversation is getting a triad between you and two other guys.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's keep going with the list. We have Rom.
Was that Rom?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I had a couple of comments. From a registry's perspective, and you know, we run a registry that holds comprehensive information because we run an ATP thick registry, and we hold information for close to 1 million domain names at Afilias for .info. It's clear from our experience that Whois information has significance, and it's important to various communities, law enforcement, intellectual property, cyber squatting. It's often the first point of contact for attorneys. In addition to that, and everybody's already talked about this, but in addition to that, in direct experience, what I've found is registries and registrars themselves depend on Whois to help determine the next step for disputes, discovery, or other legal procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're placed in a position of direct liability under penalty of law.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, it goes more than simply, you know, an attorney wants to get this information or a cyber squatter wants to get this information. Folks who are under contractual liabilities depend upon Whois. One of the things that I've been noticing on this thread, I think we need to differentiate between the following two concepts. I think it's an important differentiation. The first concept is, do we need to have all the current Whois data elements? That's the first concept. And the second concept is, should these data elements be available to anyone without any restrictions? And I think there are two separate issues. I think for the first issue, which is, do we need to have all the current Whois data elements? It's clear there is a responsibility to have reliable, complete information for important elements. Who is the registrant, who is the administrator, who is the technical contact, and who is the contact responsible for billing and finances. And folks under contracts need to have that information. On the second issue, which is, should these data elements be available to anyone without restriction? Many valid arguments exist as to why it should be restricted, including legislation, policy, et cetera. But I think there is a distinction that we need to be cognizant of and reflect in our own discussion. So those are kind of the concise points on Whois use from a registrar perspective, and ensuring that the differentiation is reflected in any of our deliberations. I also wanted to comment on a couple of issues that Abel had raised in his email. For one point, he had said for identification of online merchants, a valid method exists, use site certificates to verify the identity of online merchants. Well, here's a problem. There are less than 1 million site certificates sold, as far as I can see from reading VeriSign's reports, and there are 30 million domain names that have been sold. So to me, it seems like there is a disconnect. And finally, I wanted to also in Abel's mail, there was a note on quote-unquote owning a domain name, and just wanted to mention for the record that this is not a validated concept. Domain registrants do not own the name; they have a license to the name. So that's really just house cleaning on that front.
Very helpful, and you reminded us about the registrar use of this, which we are hearing a lot about in the transfers task force as well. Let's go on with Tim.
Hi. All I wish to say is that just in principle, that from the point of view of registrars, the who is a mandated cost, which they sustain a system, which is of great use to other folks. The question that must, I think, be addressed is if people are going to pay a cost, should it be a mandated cost, or is it something that for which they may recover money? In other words, how much of market principles need to enter into this into the resolution of who is requirements to allow for economically rational solutions that allow the cops, allow the IP lawyers, and allow the registrars and the other interest groups to get the level of information they need for the purposes which are legitimate. And I guess it's all in just a big obviousism here, but let us be clear of the extent to which market principles might sort out efficiently degree to which people are obliged or not obliged to provide information and to run up expenses. And that's my plea in this, is that we just keep in mind that because something is good does not necessarily mean it need to be free, and that because it's, and if it's paid for, it might be valued more. End of story. Thank you.
Tim, would you take a question on that?
Of course.
And before we go on to hear from Ken, in the survey, as I recall, the general findings, there were very few people who thought it ought to be free, but most people thought it should be funded through the registrant fee.
It may be, whatever cost is imposed in a system is always going to be paid through finally by the registrants. That's, but the efficiency with which other, the efficiency with which it is used, and the efficiency with which the index is created and maintained may not be optimal if one group is paying but pays an invisible kind of tax that is not efficiently administered throughout the system. Just because it ultimately is a cost that comes out of the registrant's pocket does not necessarily mean that among users it's going to be efficiently administered. If it's like a taxpayer, if it can constantly raise the tax, who cares about the efficiency with which I spend the money? So there may need to be more thought given to the user forms of pay than just the registrant pays the whole cost. Mm-hmm. The user pay principle in part.
I think you might be using user there in a different way. User...
That those who have particular or special requirements,
mm-hmm,
different from those that would exist if it was just registrant information only suitable for one group, might have to pay. Yes, there might need to be a system of payment for it that would be economically rational and that would cause rational economic use of the resource.
Are you?
This is a revolutionary doctrine of markets, I realize, but
are you proposing a subscription-based access?
I am only proposing that we leave open the possibility that forms of payment might be useful for different classes of user or different types of use.
That's much clearer. Thank you. Captured that. Ken. Ken? I don't hear Ken. Shall we go to Abel then and come back to Ken?
Ken's not reacting, that would not be a weird course of action.
Why don't you go ahead, Abel?
First of all, I agree for a large part with what Thomas says, and I do fully understand the IP concerns, the law concerns, and the ISP concerns. As far as the ISP concerns, of course they rely on who is for that information. However, what they fail to mention is that they do not need, at least affiliates does not need the information on a .com domain that's registered at VeriSign. They need the information on domains registered with him, with themselves. That data is there. They have the data. It doesn't need to be fully public for that. As far as the concerns of the IP will go, it's the same, and I am totally agreeing with that. A certain amount of data should be available for free, but as I said earlier on, that data is sufficient would be, for instance, the name, the DNS servers, and the dates. Any other information should only be available for, as far as I'm concerned, for law purposes, and only then when served with the right papers. We're talking, and of course, those who if we've got to work with a payment scheme for that, you would say there's an opt-in. Those who opt-in then can become into a database that people pay for to have access to. I can fully understand that as a business model. I agree completely, but it's not something that needs to be free. What it would also solve, to keep along that line of thinking, is the overcoming of the problems that CCTLDs have with the liberty that's available in the .com. Even within America, as far as I understand, and if I read correctly, there's already some problems with certain laws in certain states providing or demanding a higher privacy concept than currently is given. And that definitely goes for Europe, and that will probably go for more states as we go along. And that's why I basically wrote the email as well and said, if we concentrate on a trim whois, the cross database is far more easier to realize, the cost is far more effective, and the responsibility for maintaining the correct data goes back there where it should be with the ISP who registered the domain.
Can I answer?
This is Lorraine.
Yeah, can I just give an answer to Abel? Because, I read your email. Sorry, I was just completely overworked last week, and I just couldn't read an email. It was a disaster. So, regarding your reference to the IP community, okay, we need this data, and I think everybody understands that there's no problem on it. But what I want to say is that we need such information very quickly. And you mentioned in your email, you say why there would be a difference, I mean, more or less, I summarize it like that, why there would be a difference between online and offline, and why we would need this data in other ways that, for instance, the law enforcement authorities, or first because we have procedures in place to obtain this data. We've got what we call the notice and takedown procedure. Second, because we need this data as quickly as possible to avoid the dissemination of a work on the internet. I mean, if we have a video or infringement, any infringement to our rights, I mean, we know that the work will be disseminated in 24 hours. So we need to react quickly. Even 2 days would be too much. That's really our problem. It's not that. I understand your view, but I just want to tell you what our guys in our anti-piracy department say. It's very often it's too late. We cannot wait 2 days or a week.
And in answer and to fill in with what Thomas said to that, I can understand that, but I can also understand that this service is not, should not, and could not be freely available to the entire world. You are quite capable, considering the interests at stake, to pay a reasonable fee to the ISPs who provide this data. And it could stay offline. It doesn't mean that anybody who has 2 minutes interest can find out where you are, who you are, what you do, or when you do it.
Abel?
Yes?
Are you, I think we need to all remember that this is, about more than just the IT guys. So I'm going to go in another round and then maybe ask you and Thomas and others to respond to some other input from some of the other participants on the call about how the data, why there's a issue related to access to the data.
Yeah, okay, I'm happy with that.
I'm sorry that Troy and Brett, who also are from the business constituency, are not on, but I'm going to say a couple of things about my experience and cost associated with limited access to information and what that can mean to the intermediary who holds the data. But before I do that, I would like to clarify that privacy is an area that I hold the portfolio on for AT&T, online privacy, and there are actually not today in the United States, in any of the states, laws on the books which change the access to the WHOIS data. There are laws, there's in particular one, there may be laws pending, but or bills pending, but there's not a law today in the United States that would change the access to the WHOIS data. There may in the future be court cases which might have implications. But I just want to say something about intermediary costs and ask both Mom and Tim and Ken to comment on in this country. And it varies from country to country. We have presence in 60 countries, so I'm not familiar with the laws in all countries. But in this country, an ISP holds access to subscriber information, has a very limited amount of access to traffic information because it's typically not retained for a long period of time. And typically, unless they offer a service that stores the content on behalf of the client who would have to pay for it, does not hold the content of the transmission that they carry. So they have subscriber information, and they have a limited amount of traffic data, usually about 3 months. They may be retaining traffic data for a little bit longer than that for purposes of designing, configuring, troubleshooting, planning, network engineering, et cetera. Law enforcement, in order to get access to that information, because of a law in the United States, has to present a legitimate court order. Large ISPs have to maintain enforcement steps with attorneys, inside or outside counsel, who can determine what it is specifically that they're required to deliver and to law enforcement. And there are two types of subpoenas in this country, one of which can get traffic data and the other of which can actually get content going forward because, of course, as I said, it's not retained historically. If we were to move to, right now, a number of legitimate users that we all agree are legitimate users, and I'm not going toward the illegitimate users just yet, but my question is, if we were to go toward differentiated access, how would the registries and registrars envision managing the different kinds of requests that they would get? And what kind of cost would you perceive might be associated with having to add that additional review of legal documents or other kinds of requests that you would have to field rather than having public access to the WHOIS? Sorry, that's a long question.
This is Ram. It's a good question. I wish Karen was here because she's actually, the .name registry is actually facing this today, is doing it today, and she may have direct knowledge of the cost that it takes for them to do it. I can tell you that we today do get legal documents every so often where we have to comply with. And in each case, there is no real automated mechanism to handle it. It's a case-by-case basis and therefore rather expensive. But I don't have actual numbers that I can share.
Yeah, I talked to Karen about this when I talked with she and her outside counsel in some detail, and they didn't have that was about
a week or two before they presented. At that time, they didn't have a cost that they could project. But that's, I can go back to her. Thanks, Rom. Ken, you and Tim?
Are you talking to Tim Denton or Ken Stubbs?
I was going to ask both of you, since you're both from the registrar constituency.
Okay. Give me your question again shortly. With verbs.
In basic, she wants to know the cost effect of inside or outside counsel when there's a differentiated access to domain to who is information.
The cost of inside or outside counsel, I mean the lawyer's cost?
Well, no, Tim, it was a little more expansive than that, even, Abel.
I tried to summarize, yes.
Yes, but you can see how appalled he was at even the short version.
Yeah. He's pretty picky.
If you move to differentiate access,
yes.
How would you? What changes in the help desk function? What additional cost do you think the registrar might incur?
You know what? I don't. That's a factual question, and it deserves a factual estimate. And I don't think I can make that at the moment. I don't think I can.
You know, one thing from my previous conversations with registrars,
yes.
What I've been told in my one-on-one conversations is the following, that right now the only kinds of court guys get law enforcement,
yes.
Have to do with when an investigation is underway, the access to the public available who is has now led to the need to obtain maybe credit card information. It may be a consumer fraud situation. It may be a money laundering situation. It may be a pirated website. Maybe consumer, you know, fraud. And so there's a legal investigation underway, and the register. And I, Rom, so far that's the only conversation I've had is when it's been a thin registry. A registrar might get a subpoena for the credit card transaction from law enforcement because it's a criminal investigation.
I hear you. I think from a registry perspective, from a TIC registry perspective, we've had cases where we've not only been asked to provide information for the current registrant, but we've also been asked to provide information about the life cycle of the domain.
Oh, right. Yes, you're right. That's the other thing.
I got to tell you, the cost of that, I would estimate in the .com.net org area where a domain may have been transferred tens if not hundreds of times, is bound to be quite significant.
Yeah. But that data does not actually exist anymore in the Whois anyway, right? The life cycle information?
Yeah, that's correct. In general, the Whois only says what the last update was. It doesn't even tell you what the update was. It just says it was updated on such and such a date.
Mm-hmm. And that is the kind of information, Lawrence, that I know that I have heard discussed as a change, that in the past there was that there's been a continued diminution of the kind of information that has been made available in the Whois, but I don't mean to go in that direction. I want to go back. So we don't actually know.
But Marilyn, the place where I was going did have a relevance to Whois. The place
right.
I was going was when there is a request for life cycle information for a domain, it generally is a request for Whois information going back in the past, not just, you know, general information. It's really about Whois information so that in some cases it often happens in the case of discovery where someone wants to, where the complainant wants to establish a pattern of deceptive behavior.
I see. Okay. Right. Okay.
Can I get in with you?
Yeah, you can. I just wanted to tell you why I'd asked the question. Because Tim had made a plea that we be concerned and aware of the fact that there may be a need to look at different until I'm kind of summarizing, but differentiated access for different purposes and maybe even subscription fees or some form of payment associated with it. And I was trying to identify whether he and the registrars had thoroughly kind of analyzed or even begun to analyze what additional costs might be associated with such a model.
I can say that from our point of view, I don't believe that Two Cows has. But I think that as soon as you turn the sharp minds of business to a problem like this, they come up with something that can be, justified. But the major point is that you're dealing with a product that some people gather that other people particularly want to use, and that normally in economic life, the obligation to gather may be imposed by law or by contract, but that the pricing of it and the service levels may differ. And I just am a little concerned that we not get ourselves to a socialized solution for what might be perfectly agreeably set up between various classes of user and registrars or registries to get information and to do so efficiently and satisfactorily for all concerned that may involve payments. And that's just my principle here. And I didn't want to get us down too far down a track in which we refused to consider this possibility. And I'm not saying we were about to either.
Tim, I want to go to Thomas, and then I want to kind of go to a second question. Are you speaking for the registrars for Two Cows, or do you think it's kind of maybe a general concept that's widely held? We don't need to.
I can say that. First of all, you're asking me to. You're asking me to speak on behalf of registrars. I could say that registrars probably, being human being and being businessmen, would be favor some kind of solution that is payment-oriented. Second, that in the registrars' discussions of this issue, there is some sense of dissatisfaction as to, why we're maintaining who is and for who is benefiting and is it us, and if who is has to be redesigned again, it might be designed on a different basis than it currently is to suit registrar interests. So I don't wish to speak definitively, but I can say that registrars are concerned that the Who Is Task Force report not saddle them or their customers with costs which can't be recovered or costs which get out of control, and that there is an appropriate system of balancing the interest between those for whom it's very useful, those for whom it's partly useful, and those for whom it's not useful at all. How's that?
I'll come back on a question to you, but let me go to Thomas.
Well, several things. First of all, a remark about your concern, Marilyn, that administering subpoenas may be expanded to registrars. I don't believe that differentiated access automatically has to mean that subpoenas come into the game. I could, for instance, imagine some kind of an accreditation regime where data users have a possibility to get basically online access to the data, but under conditions, under a contract with the registrar or the registry or with ICANN or whomever, and under regulations on the use of the data. I think that this kind of approach would, on the one hand, avoid the problems and costs you described, and would, on the other hand, satisfy a lot of desires and needs we have. So I think this is maybe something worth thinking about. Second point I wanted to come back for, maybe a little bit late, was something Laurent said about notice and takedown procedures. I'm wondering a bit, do you actually need the registrants who is information for notice on takedown. As far as I have understood it, what you really need is information about the ISP, which hosts things, and that's an information you won't get from domain name, who is normally. You will get that information from IP number, who is. So I don't think this example actually works to justify quick access. So I was really curious to hear a bit more about that. And likewise, I think maybe I should make a suggestion. Marilyn talked about various uses which need whois in an essential way, and Lorenzo talked about other users. Could you folks possibly just write up these users and their actual requirements on whois and send that to the mailing list? I think that this could be very educational for all of us, and I have to clarify.
Let me talk to Lorenz about this just a minute, and to Tony and others. We did this. It is now several years ago, doing the WIPO fast track study, which led to the UDIP. Users appeared and testified in detail on their uses of not just whois, that was not the purpose of the fast track, but of the range of problems that existed in relation to consumer fraud. And I would be happy to, Lorenz, work with you. The urgent examples that business users often face, leaving aside trademark infringement issues, Thomas, are issues where we have a domain name which is being misused and has a fraudulent site up under our name, and law enforcement comes to us. And we are required by law enforcement to take immediate action to deal with that, both. So we are caught in the middle, and we don't have an option of waiting several days.
Absolutely. And when you say we are required, it's absolutely true in Europe, because we've got an instrument which is a counterfeiting, it's a regulation which states that we have the primary responsibility for finding the infringer dealing with things related to the infringement. Yeah.
No disagreement with that. What I was looking at was the question: what kind of access do you need in order to fulfill, in order to have it useful? I suppose you don't need name service or expiration date, for instance, if you want to make a notice on takedown.
No, but we would need the email address of the content provider of the website.
Let me work with you, but let me disagree with you a little bit, Thomas. We are. Let me tell you that we have been, because of fraudulent information and inaccurate information, incomplete information, unable to find the contact. We have had to, in some cases, hire private detectives. We have had to, and this is dealing with consumer fraud. So we may need the more detailed information. We may have to bring legal action in order to recover the name, in order to get the fraudulent site down.
Hey, Marilyn, do you remember the case of the Spam King and how the Spam King was located and brought down several years ago? I think it was 1997.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's a great example of why the people who are looking for infringements need access to all of the whois data and as much historical access as they can get.
So maybe what we could do is try to write up some examples, Thomas, of the kinds of situations that are being dealt with, because I think a lot of people think it is merely trademark lawyers outpiecing their mark and not understanding that misuse of the name has created a harm to users or in some cases an actual crime.
I have no problem with that kind of access. I'm really just trying to understand who needs what when.
Sure. But Thomas, we can write a paper on that. I mean, instead of, because, I mean, for the notice and takedown, you ask questions, we can spend at least 15 minutes speaking about that. And but we can write a paper on it. And
that's why I asked you to write on the list.
Definitely.
So, okay. So, guys, I want to move us. This has been, we've been focused on searchability, and I want to take us back to searchability. This has been a very good conversation. I'm going to summarize some what I see emerging out of this, but before I do that, I want to go to back to Christy, because her team is working on searchability, and then I want to go to one other item before we wrap up for today. Christy, anything else that you want to say about the work your group is doing?
Well, just that we appreciate, you know, anybody else's input. And if anybody wants to give us input, I would be happy to pass our kind of paper around to them.
You know, what I want to do, guys, is be ready to, for us, we really need to post some kind of an interim report by the end of the week. And I know we're not going to be where we had hoped to be. But the good news for you guys, or bad news, is that I'm not going to Plenty Pot, to the ITU Plenty Pot, until the 6th. My view being that government can only do so much harm to the Internet in the first 2 weeks before I get there, and I'll have 2 weeks to rescue it after I get there.
I do have a couple questions.
Yes.
Okay, for the group. Is anyone uncomfortable with the idea that Tim Denton brought forward about the economics of the situation and possibly having some recommending some things being able to be paid for? Yes or no? Just a yes or no. Anybody that does have an issue, just let me know.
I am not comfortable that we have thoroughly explored the, and I think we should more thoroughly explore as a topic, and you really kind of jumped into the next topic I wanted to raise,
okay,
which is the question. I think we need to have a dialogue, and I want to ask you guys a question about this. We need to have a dialogue about how is who is funded today, because I think there are some assumptions about how it's funded that may not be being implemented by business models of the registrars themselves. The assumption that I think is in place today in the community is that who is embedded, that any service is embedded in the fee that is charged to the registrant. My observation is that I see a race to zero in some of the business models. In a competitive environment, that's certainly one approach. A race to zero means that there's a dependency on other sources of funding, which might be advertising, it might be resale of the list, it might be subsidy from other services that an entity provides. I'm saying all of this with no judgment. I'm just sort of... So I think we ought to talk about who is funded today, and then in that conversation, we can have the conversation about what are the models or the options for how its cost is borne in the future. And that would allow us to address the point that Tim has raised, but reflect input from the survey, which in many cases seem to assume that it would be embedded in the registrant fee in some way.
Marilyn, I have a question.
Sure, Thomas?
How is the registrar's internal funding of this service relevant to our policy making? The registrar... May I continue, please?
Sorry,
RAA... basically says, okay, registrars at their own cost provide the following services. It is registrars' business where to move that cost. They can move, of course, cross-subsidize it. They can take it from registrars' fees, whatever. but it is their business, and I'm not sure it is really important for us. The question we have is, do registrars have to provide this service to data users at their cost, or at data users' cost, or at a real third party's cost? We are not in the business, I believe, of discussing the business models which are hidden behind the question what does at their own cost mean. Just means it doesn't cost anyone else.
Thomas, I actually disagree with you in one aspect, I think, of what you interpreted what I said. The fourth item that we are looking at, bulk access, resale of data, et cetera, there are implications in, from a policy perspective that were raised in the questions we asked in the survey. If there is an incentive to resell the data, that certainly has, and if we're going to be making a policy recommendation that there should be no resale of the data, I think we can make a policy recommendation without making an observation on the method that the registrar uses to provide this particular service. But if you remember, we did also ask in the survey, how should the, who is service be funded? And I think we can make a comment on that.
Well, the question was badly posed in that case because it really made a distinction between registrants and registrant registry, which doesn't make any sense at that point, at least from a policy perspective. I mean, we are never going to see an ICANN policy which says registrars are going to provide at the registrant's cost the following information for public access. That kind of policy just wouldn't make any sense.
But I think that Tim raised a point that we need to understand, and that is, if we are proposing a Rolls Royce of suite of services, you know, without saying anything about the cost, about the price, we would need to be reflect in our recommendation an awareness that there is a cost to the provision of such a Rolls-Royce suite of services.
No objection against that, and the point I was trying to make is actually that it should be left to registrars and that they should possibly even be able to recover it, but that we don't have to, that the question we have to answer is, what does, at this point, what does the relationship between registrar and data user look like? Does the data user pay? And whatever else may happen to cross-subsidize such a service or to pay for it, that, I believe, is outside our scope. Is this clear?
Well, I'm not sure that everyone would agree with you because you are, I think, assuming that something that I did not see in the survey, and I would ask Lorenz and Thomas and Christy and others to comment on. I believe that the survey assumed that there would be a certain baseline of who is data available, and that what we are now talking about in the task force is is there a concept such as a baseline of data, and that would mean what elements are available, and if there's a Rolls Royce, should there be differentiated fees associated with it, and then who should pay?
Yeah, Marilyn and Thomas, I think we really have to consider this since we're going to, I think, move forward and say that they can no longer, you know, resell or permit the resalability of bulk access, you know, or they can't resell bulk access to data to marketing people anymore. That's what we're going to tell them, right? No more bulk access to marketing people, no more, you know, we're going to try to do something about the spam, right? So if we say you can't have these, you know, $10,000 checks from people anymore unless, you know, they're IP or law, we're reducing the amount of money that they're bringing in down to quite a bit. So we may have to enable them to bring in money through another avenue so they can still provide a great service. And it's all may and maybe and, you know.
Christy?
Yes, sir.
I may have to say it might be quite the reverse, that companies that force to sell millions worth of data for $10,000, the incentives might be quite the other way around.
Excellent.
I was going to say 10 grand is absolutely free for a database like that. They would love any stop to that.
It is for a database of the larger registrars, but if you look at the SnapNames data and you see that many of the registrars have 1,000 names, 2,000 names, 5,000 names, Tim, what would your comment be about the $10,000 fee in that case?
Well, it's an incentive for these smaller companies to keep an appropriate list that is commercially useful.
Uh-huh.
But it's in a free market, people are not obliged to spend $10,000 for $2,000 worth of data.
Yeah,
but for us, we're obliged to. The larger registrars are obliged to spend a good deal.
Uh-huh.
To give away customer data or sell customer data, forced for $10,000 when it may be worth more.
Uh-huh.
So. Obviously.
Very nice.
I have no greater wisdom on it than that this morning. I'm sorry.
Okay, guys, we are getting close to running out of time, but I want to. So we need to have a further discussion specifically about funding, and I think one of the Christy Capsule captured the point that I was actually trying to get a focus on, and that is that, you know, how is it being funded now? What are the issues associated with it? Without dictating the price, which I think, Thomas, I understand the point, in addition to understanding that's not our purview, the issue really was, what are the policy implications of some of the recommendations that we might be making? And I don't think that there will be unanimity within the group on how should it be paid for. So I think it's important to have this debate within the group, or have this discussion. Let me change this. Have this discussion within the group, since I think from a task force perspective, we're trying to have discussions and not debates. Besides funding, we've talked about searchability. We all owe Christy some comments on that. What other group is on that can say something about the status of their doc? I know Steve is not on, and he was going to pick up for Karen in her absence.
And actually nothing happened in Karen's absence so far. I sent out with one possible draft of a rough idea of what differentiated bike access may look like.
Okay.
I think you have a copy of that. I can also send it to the full task force if you like it.
Yeah.
The idea was to say something like, okay, we have mandatory bike access, and we have voluntary bike access, and we have no other access to the data, and to look at what kinds of policies would be appropriate for these two kinds of access, but there was no feedback whatsoever.
Thomas, did you distinguish, since our recommendation presently says sort of no resale for marketing purposes? The recommendation presently says only non-marketing bulk access should be allowed.
I did not look at users in that kind. I tried to come up with a different and maybe more useful distinction between access and users. I think I will send that document to the entire task force,
yeah,
so you can comment on it.
Okay, guys, we have a recommendation that you have to, you know, let me ask you to look at the existing very high-level recommendation against the augmentation that each of the work able to provide, because what we had asked for comment was a very high level, and now what we're trying to do is augment it. And Thomas, it sounds like maybe what we have is some additional work from this working group.
I'm sorry?
I was trying to grasp whether the working group had also addressed the recommendation that's in place today.
There was no dialogue within the working group besides that one message I sent last week. Karen passed over to Steve and nothing happened.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. I will follow up with Steve on that. Rom?
Marilyn, and there hasn't been a great deal of discussion even after, I mean, after posting the document, the recommendation, et cetera. So I will get something finalized over to you very shortly.
Okay. Do you need more input from anybody at this point, or do you want to just try to get it drafted and then we can get it back out to the group? And
the latter.
Okay. Who am I missing? I'm missing Steve on accuracy as well, so I'll need to follow up with him, and maybe Tony and I can try to add him on right after this. We're going to have real trouble posting anything by the end of the week with the present status of the work. Christy's work, I think, is probably the most documented so far. We also have to realize, guys, that we have an interim report that we have to draft and publish, and I would... I'd like to think that...
Hello?
I'd like to think that I won't be drafting that by myself.
Hearing the hundreds of cheers of help, offers of help, Marilyn.
I'm thinking, run away.
Flee. I will be able to help you in between my trips to Amsterdam. So there we are.
I think we need a... I think we need a more robust discussion, Tim, with the registrars.
Mm-hmm. And what would that mean? More of them to talk about this?
I think that actually, I do think that.
Something will be coming out of the Amsterdam meeting of registrars in coming up this weekend.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Is there going to be something going on at your meeting that maybe would then be good to come back to?
Oh, absolutely. The issue after transfers is solved. Who is next? You know, that's and who is heating up.
Well, maybe we could ask you, because I know several of the registrars have a meeting at the FTC, U.S. FTC on Thursday.
Yeah, we're seeing it then there or whatever, yes.
And then you guys are going to Amsterdam.
Yes.
Maybe we could Tony and I could draft on behalf of the task force a formal invitation to the to you guys for a call off schedule, not Monday, because the people will be traveling back, but we could look at a date later in the week and have a task force call with a larger group of the registrars toward the end of the week.
That might be possible, yes. I can certainly get the idea around the executive committee, sure.
And Rom, I think that you might want to have the registries... You might want to plan to participate in that. You might want to make that available to at least the .biz, .info. I mean, you and Karen are on the group, but the maybe even .pro. I'm not looking so much at the really highly sponsored registries, but you might want to think about asking because of the thick who is. Is Rom still with us? Maybe not. But it seems to me that toward the end of next week, we really ought to try to be better prepared to have a further discussion with an open call with the registries and registrars.
I think that would be welcome.
And then the other thing I'm going to try to do for Monday of next week is have John Clinton and Patrick Falstrom.
Oh, no.
And to try to have... several of the other CCTLDs, they were a little distracted due to their work on evolution and reform, and I wasn't able to get confirmation.
Marilyn, I'm sorry, I missed some part.
Sorry.
What precisely was the point of the meeting with John Clinton?
Pardon me?
What precisely was the purpose of the meeting with Clinton?
Tom, I had posted this to the group that we wanted to invite Patrick and John to talk about above the DNS directory services and the status on that as a
informational awareness to the group so that we sort of knew what else was going on.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
She's already answered my question.
And I also wanted to get Rick Weston re-engaged to have him talk about more from a different point of view from some of the folks who are working on the standards process at the IETF related to WHOIS. We heard, if you guys will remember, a presentation from VeriSign, which focused on some of their work, but I wanted to have just a bit more of a view of where these guys think that the IETF work is going to deliver some value in the areas of searchability. So we were aware of what's going on in the external world. Our recommendation doesn't sort of fall on deaf ears because we're not being, reflective.
Marilyn, this is Rom.
Yep.
Just a clarification, the VeriSign presentation, the VeriSign work was on VeriSign Labs' YouWhois project, and the IETF work is on CRISP, which is a cross-registry.
Actually, Rom, I wish you were right. Their entire presentation was about CRISP. And so we actually didn't get any real detail on the YouWhois. If you look at the materials that they made available to us.
I hear you. And we can certainly, schedule that for the future. But anyway, what I really wanted to say was that the VeriSign project is kind of separate from the IETF project.
And we had hoped to hear that from them. What we got was, I think, a pretty good overview of very, very high-level overview of a focus on CRISP and also a little bit of information on the YouWhois. I kind of feel like Jack didn't get much data at all on YouWhois.
I didn't tell us anything about YouWhois.
Thank you.
I went to the website, I used it, I looked at it, I still don't have any information about YouWhois.
I've gone back to them, Rom, and told them that. Moving ahead, in any case, we can try to have... Rick is going to be traveling, isn't he, Tim, next Monday?
I do not know Rick's whereabouts next Monday, but it is likely that he would be either in the air or coming back, yes.
Right. So let me see if we can get Patrick and John and some of the CCTLDs for Monday. I think we need to boil this down, guys, into realizing I will post to the group the outline of what the interim report has to include.
Thank you.
It's rather substantial, and we can figure out where we are. We also need to, would it help you, Tim, if Tony and I, as the co-chairs...
It certainly would help me. It's going to happen anyway, but it would powerfully assist to have a precise email saying we need your intervention we have regular registrar-wide, constituency-wide telephone calls that are happening at scheduled events now, usually Thursday afternoon. We just had another one, and I think it would be helpful if we could gather and talk to you folk about, collectively get our views across as to what's up, because it is, I can't speak for all of them, and it's helpful for them to get a sense it'd be helpful for you to get a sense of where the opinions lie, yes.
Good. And can you tell us, so we'll send you the invitation, can you just tell us for informational purposes what time your calls are?
Yeah, I'm going to have. I'll be on the call this afternoon, and I think that it would be helpful for you to join our. I'm talking about executive committee this afternoon. I will raise this issue, and I think you guys should be on a call with us. Whether it's a registry call or whether it's a WHOIS task force call is immaterial.
Okay, I think let me ask the group, but I would assume we would all welcome that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
I'd be very happy to listen.
Right. And I think that's the point. We would need to listen to you guys. we actually cannot make commitments about what our recommendation is while we're trying to hammer them out, but we need to be moving ahead to what our recommendations are. What on your list of issues that you are most concerned, that you're most concerned about, where do you see what I see emerging in the task force is maybe some I'm gonna call it some lack of consensus on certain areas. We need to start documenting that,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that we understand where we have consensus and where we don't. And we may not have consensus on the following. I think we will have consensus on the importance of accuracy, remembering that we're separating access from accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
I have consensus on accuracy. I think we will be able to reach consensus on the elements that are gathered. I think we will be able to get consensus on the searchability. And I think we'll be able to get consensus on limiting the use of data for marketing purposes, however that gets spelled out. Here's a couple of areas where we may not have consensus. We may not have consensus on how many of the elements should remain, quote, publicly available.
In other words, free?
No.
Available.
Tim, you know, I haven't even gotten to free yet. Lighten up. I'm getting there, though.
Marilyn, I'm sorry to step in here, but I think the point Tim was making is important, because what precisely do you mean by publicly available? Available for everyone who possibly for a fee, or available for everyone for free?
No.
There's another distinction.
Guys, I have not gone to fee yet. I'm going to get to fee. That's my next item.
Publicly available is for free, okay?
No, not necessarily. Publicly available means that everyone can access it, regardless of whether it's free or not.
Like a museum, you pay a dollar to get into.
Yeah.
It's publicly available.
Okay.
And then, so we may not have consensus on should all the elements be publicly available. We may not have consensus on whether there should be a fee, and whether there should be a fee for everyone, or there should be what I'm calling differentiated access. Thomas, does that help?
Bradley.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the areas where I think we may not have consensus. The other area where we may not. So does any? Can anyone? What else? We may not have. Then I think the question that's going to be in front of us is. Are there other things going on? So let's say that hypothetically, Rom, Chris was making significant progress, and there was a view on the part of the registrars and registries that in the next 2-3 years, I'm making this up, that Chris would be adopted and implemented. There's going to be a cost associated with the adoption of CRISP, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Rob? I think we need to also, I don't know what the view, Tim, of the registrars is about whether they envision, how they envision adopting standards like CRISP. Do they assume that is totally up to that we could have non-standard implementations as we, or are they assuming that when a standard is made available that the community would widely embrace and implement a standard like CRISP? No IETF standards are mandated.
That is correct.
Rom, you're not here, Rom?
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm back.
Rom, question is, forgot. Sorry. I'll email it to you.
Mom, I was just asking what your view was of the, right now, of the time frame on CRISP.
A long time away, as measured not in not in weeks or not even in months, in my opinion. It's very early stages, and if it is anything like the normal process that happens, it often takes a year or two before the general community comes to a rough consensus,
right.
And that there are actual working implementations, because that is ITF motto, rough consensus,
right.
And working code. So I suspect that we're, and I'll stick my neck out, I think we're at least a year away from something that's demonstrably working in multiple places.
So where I was going was to say, you know, the task force might say, based on the advice of technical group and the IETF, that CRISP is coming down the pipe and is likely to address certain issues, that we recommend interim procedures until the standard is available. And I'm just making this up, but I mean, I could envision that since CRISP will provide, I believe, some of the, it'll make differentiated access more feasible.
Mm-hmm. Just my personal opinion, I think, while we certainly have the ability to say that, but I think given that CRISP is in progress, we run the risk of having the knees, you know, cut out from under that particular recommendation, because it's relatively easy for someone to come back and say, well, that's what CRISP is for. You guys should, put your comments into the CRISP working group and into that forum, because that's where it's going. An interim, why would you want to implement something in the interim when you know that it's going to potentially go away altogether?
I'm sorry, where I was going was a recognition that any recommendations we made would have to be interim, and therefore we might recommend, hypothetically, we might recommend against major changes, which would add cost.
Marilyn?
Yeah, I'm. That's exactly where I want to go, Thomas, is to hear your thoughts on that.
No, it's Abel.
Oh,
okay.
Abel, sorry.
I have thoughts too, you know. But anyway, we will differentiate on this. And this, I'm quite sure. First of all, I think that the CRISP project is very great, but is even further away than its 12 months that's now predicted. I'm thinking about 2 to 2.5 years. But
yeah, I had actually thought it was 2 to 3 years.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Fine.
Secondly, I think that if we're talking about a WHOIS policy, and we're talking about IETF input and registrar input, I think we should set down a policy to which CRISP in the end would evolve as perhaps the instrument, but the policy would remain the same.
I don't disagree. I was just trying, I think that's very helpful. What I was trying to lay out is, you know, let's say the task force decided that, hypothetically, that certain changes were needed in searchability or in the elements, either increasing them or, you know, there's certainly the uniformity issue as well. If the task force were to say, based on the review we've gotten and the advice we've gotten, we would say that we would not recommend costly redesign
of the database.
Of the database until CRISP, until CRISP is, you know, we would probably put a time frame on it, Rom, I would think, of saying, you know, we would, and I'm really making this up, you guys are going to have to really help me with this, then we would back into we would be making what I'm calling interim recommendations that reflect an awareness of CRISP as an emerging standard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe something like what's in, I think, some of the registry agreements, where these agreements say that the registry will adopt EPP 120 days after it has become some point on the standard track.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure what it is. It's either draft or proposed standard, something like that, so that we say, okay, here's the timeline. We don't expect
you to implement this fully before CRISP is there, but please, when it's there, go for it and use it to implement the policy we are setting. This may be
mm-hmm.
reasonable, but well, I suppose Ram has something to say about it.
I guess I do. I like the idea a lot. I mean, you know, right now the registries are required to adopt EPP upon it becoming a, you know, standards draft, adopted by the standard 135 days later. I think there's a little bit of complication with CRISP and who is, because in a thin registry, you've got who is being done by many entities, not just, you know, five or six entities like registries. Second is the potential impact of this on CCTLDs and the who is there.
Ah, yes, right. And I had just written that down, that I needed to ask you what that would mean for CCTLDs.
I think it makes a great deal of sense for CCTLDs to adopt it as well. Again, since it's an IETF thing, if many of the major forces move that way, it's likely that, you know, those who decide to wait and see are likely to go in a similar manner as well. I'm not referring to just CCTLDs, but in a general manner. I think we might be well served by saying that should CRISP be get momentum, again, just pointing out, you know, there are over 1,000 working groups for IETF. Not all of the things that they come out with come adopted or become popular. So I think we should hedge our bets a little bit.
Yeah, okay. But Ram, my experience with, I fully understand this problem, believe me, because one of the challenges we face in industry is, in order to ensure a standard is adopted, we often have to go out and create a forum that takes it to the next step.
That's right. But in general, Marilyn, I think the principles we're trying to get to, they make sense, and I like the suggestion that, you know, we'll have we suggest the development of interim standards or interim I don't know what to call it, you know, insert a word there, appropriate word there, that, you know, would be placeholder until fully developed standards are adopted.
And maybe calling, guys, I would ask you to think about this. You know, I think we need something that I don't feel like those of us who aren't really in-depth technical has yet. I think we actually, if we decide this is the thing to do, I think we need a more in-depth discussion where I would really like to have Rick Wesson, Ram, and some other folks helping some of us to understand, based on the areas we are addressing, where is CRISP a potential answer and where is it not? Because I don't expect Chris to address the issue of accuracy of data, and I want to go back. I want to go back to a problem with accuracy of data. We need to have a discussion in the group, and maybe we just need to come up with a list of questions. But what responsibility does the registrant themselves bear for accuracy of data? Remember, we're not dealing with access right now. What responsibility does the registrant bear for accuracy of data? Because we are basically asking, and remember Bernie told us that's what happens in Canada, we're asking registrars to disconnect the name if the data is not made accurate within a certain period of time. And that is basically what, you know, through enforcement of accuracy, that is the position we're putting the registrars in. So we need to think about, does the 15 days need to be elongated?
Mm-hmm.
Does there need to be a redemption fee? Should we extend redemption period process to this so that a registrar could make the name go dark to get the attention of the... And particularly because of the inaccuracy of the who is data, the registrar may not have accurate email information at this point to even reach the registrar. Those are some of the questions that I need you guys to be thinking about on accuracy.
Yeah, I know, but...
Maybe what we should try to do is identify outstanding questions. And we probably also need to be thinking about, are we going to have a public outreach period spent in Shanghai? The CCTLD, Bernie is in agreement to try to find us, those of us who are there, opportunity to meet with the CCTLD. We could do on Sunday during their meeting. Or we could, Thomas, think about whether we would want to use part of the GA.
Well, we'll have to figure out the permit for the GA first, because
I know.
Alexander won't be there due to time reasons. He's finishing up his thesis,
right.
I think. And, well, in my case, timing could most likely work out, but it doesn't look like funding will work out. So
have you explored how much funding you need?
Not precisely yet. Could I?
Would you? I think it. If you could explore how much funding you need.
In dollars? How long is it?
What?
How long is it? 5 days, yes?
I think
Well, it's travel and hotel, right?
Yeah, that's 5 days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Nellie?
Yeah?
It's 5 days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then travel will be in dollars, including hotels, approximately $1,700 to $2,000.
And then that would be travel, and then there would be the hotel.
There'll be airplane and hotel.
Both for Shanghai?
Yeah, my Shanghai.
Yes, Thomas. I've been there quite a few times.
Thomas,
I can't afford it too at the moment, but I've been there a number of times.
I can tell you that the airplane from Brussels is €800 for economy class.
So it's $800.
And the hotel.
But he has to fly from Munich, so it'd be slightly more expensive.
Okay, guys, I know we need to wrap up. This has been very informative, as always. I feel like we have a huge amount of data to try to organize. Let me ask you guys a question. Would it be helpful in the further outreach sessions for us to provide a transcript for those sessions? It would certainly help us in terms of documenting our the rest of our outreach.
I think so.
It would make it searchable, and that would be very
okay.
Very
I will do. It's fairly expensive. It's $60 for 15 minutes. But I will, Glenn, I will work to get transcription for the further outreach calls.
Fine, Marilyn.
We are finding that actually, I think, very helpful in the transcript task force. So we will add that as an element. There may be two calls next week. We get the registrar outreach.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Marilyn. See you.
Marilyn?
Yes,
Marilyn.
Thomas?
One technical point about AT&T's conference call system. It's one of the reasons.
Sorry.
Why I.
Say that again. Sorry.
Okay, just one point about this conference call system. Maybe you can influence someone. When you mute the line using the conference call system, or when you unmute it, you get about 10 to 15 seconds of text, which means that you lose a lot of time.
Ah.
It always says, okay, your line is on mute now. In order to return to the menu, please press #0.
Oh, because you're... Right. I'm using my phone.
I'm sometimes asking stupid questions for things which just were said. That's precisely when I'm just unmuting or muting and just don't get entire sentences.
I'll provide that feedback. I am exploring with Stuart whether he might be able to find some additional sources of funding through contributions in order to have certain experts there at the meeting. And I will urge him to consider trying to find a way to help with having you there as a technical expert.
because besides the GA, I think you're really needed there for the transfers issue.
Oh. So we'll see. Actually, I think for as far as the named council transfers, and no, that was the leads. The leads was concerned. It's more Alexander's thing right now. What else is going on with respect to transfers right now?
Denise Michelle has contacted you about.
Yeah, she has.
Right, right. That was the work. That was the workshop I was thinking about. So let me go back to him and tell him that I just wanted to remind him of the point I had raised with him that he really needs some technical expertise there. And he should really treat you as someone who brings that expertise. I don't know what good it will do, but it's worth my raising it with him.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I will talk to you later.
One other point. I will probably slowly step back once again from things in the coming weeks because there's still one exam pending, and I really want to get it done before Shanghai.
Okay.
I've been a little bit slow in learning for that so far, so I'll most likely step back a bit. It's not really that important because I don't have a schedule yet, and it can be done fairly short term, like calling a secretary and saying, okay, I need to schedule for an exam. That's rather informal here, but I should really get to speed with this.
And get them all behind you.
Yes, one more.
Yes.
Not even mathematics.
Let me work with Denise. I had promised her some dates because she needs to get us all together to do the planning of that transfers event, too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.